This is Studio B Live. I'm your host, David Burns, from Long Lane Honeybee Farms. Thanks for joining us today. It's always good to be here sharing some beekeeping ideas with you. And hopefully, if you're interested in beekeeping, you've tuned in because you want to learn more so that you can be a beekeeper in the spring. And if you are a beekeeper, I know you tuned in to learn more about beekeeping. And we're happy to share with you from our operation here at Long Lane Honeybee Farms. That's what we do, is we do everything to do with bees. Bees are our business. It's good to have Sherry back in the studio with us today. She still has a little nose sniffle, been fighting a cold the last few days. And I noticed you got little drops of rain all over your back, Sherry. Did you get rained on, or just dripping off the roof there, I think, huh?
Yeah, what's temperature out today?
It's probably 38.
Well, 38's high enough apparently to melt all the snow and all the icicles that are hanging off of the store. And I got wet while I was running in here.
Yeah, I see that. Good temperature for the bees, though. It's about 30, 40 degrees, perfect. We got about 3 or 4 inches of snow, and so I really should go out there and knock the snow off the hive. Some of my hives have the not so good top covers like migratory lids, and if the snow sits up there and melts, it might find a way to drip on the bees, so I always try to keep that off. You think I would, over the years, since we manufacture our own equipment, you think I would. I have been replacing more and more, but it's a lot, you know?
Well, you know what they say about the shoemaker's children, they always have the worst shoes.
Yeah, and the barber, I think the barber's kids have the worst haircut or something, you know? Okay.
Now, what did you mean when you said it was perfect weather for bees?
Well, 40 degrees is the ideal temperature to overwinter your bees at. At 40 degrees, they don't really consume much food to stay warm because it's not that cold. And anything above 40, they could start breaking the cluster and flying out and consuming more honey just because they're doing things. So 40 degrees kind of keeps them clustered. And so, you know, they're kind of hibernating at 40 degrees. And it's not real moist. Last winter, we had so much moisture. Like, remember the day that it was real foggy for like 2 or 3 days that you were almost in a wreck? A wreck happened just before you. That was in January. And all that moisture in the air, you know, it just drifts into the hive, too. So I like it about 30 to 40 degrees and dry all winter, and that'd be good for the bees. Hey, you got some more to share today about some recipes?
Yeah, you know, it's that time of year. It's Christmas time, and this is the week when I start my Christmas baking. I've got cookies to make. I've got candy to make, and so I thought I'd dig out a couple of Christmas recipes that people might be able to use.
Hey, let's start with chocolate chip cookies. I'm eating these store-bought chocolate chips today.
Well, I can do chocolate chip cookies, but that's not very Christmassy.
That's true.
Okay, well, I'll do David's favorite chocolate chip cookies first, and these are everybody's favorite chocolate chip cookies. I can't keep them around when they're in the house. People just gravitate towards them and eat them all up, but they're not particularly Christmassy, but I will give you the recipe for them. You've got to have a cup of honey, a half cup, did I say a cup of honey? It's a half cup honey, a half cup butter, one egg, so it doesn't take very many eggs. This recipe doesn't make a whole lot. It makes about 3 dozen. 1 1/4 cups flour, 1/4 teaspoon salt, 1/2 cup chocolate chips, and 1 teaspoon baking powder. So this really does make a very small batch. So if you're trying to make it for you and your hubby or for your wife, then this would be just perfect. But if you've got a couple of kids, you're going to have to double this up. Cream your honey and your butter together, and you add the egg and beat well. Sift together the dry ingredients and add to the cream mixture and blend well. Then you add the vanilla, the chips, and mix well. You've got to do everything well. Drop by the teaspoons onto a greased cookie sheet. You bake at 375 for 12 to 15 minutes. That's all there is, but they really, really, really are good. That's a recipe that came from a little book called My Favorite Honey Recipes, and I want to look up the date for you because this book is very, very old. And it was self-published by a woman, but I don't see here. Well, it says reprinted December 2002, but I don't know what it was. But it's a very, very, very old book, I can tell. But you know what I really wanted to give you today was a fudge sauce. This can be really good on ice cream. This was a recipe by a wonderful lady by the name of Edna Bright. And Edna and her husband, Woody, had bees. And they had bees for years, as far as I can remember. And they would go to the local festival every summer. And she would sell this fudge sauce along with their honey. And she said that it's actually one of the better sellers at their table during that time. Everybody came around for their fudge sauce. So I want to give you the recipe. She sent it just to me. Wasn't that nice of her? This fudge sauce takes a half cup butter, a half cup cocoa, 2 tablespoons of cornstarch, 1 cup of honey. It takes a lot of honey, and boy, is it sweet. It's really good. 1 cup water, 1 cup miniature marshmallows, or 12 of the big ones, and a teaspoon of vanilla. You melt your butter first. You add your cornstarch and cocoa. You blend well. Then you add your honey and water. You cook this over low heat, stirring constantly until it gets thick and comes to a boil. Take it off the heat, then you add your marshmallows after you take it off the heat. You stir that until it's melted. Then you add your vanilla at the very end. And we made it 1 year, and we put it in our regular 1 pound honey jars. And we put our regular label on it, and then we also added another little label that had the name of it and what the ingredients were, and people did love it. It was very, very, very good. So, the next one I want to give to you, I hope you're writing these all down. Let me find the next one. The next one is very Christmassy, and it's called Divinity. Who gets Divinity at Christmas time? A lot of people do. This is Honey Divinity. And you have to use for this 1/4 cup of honey, 2.5 cups of sugar, 2/3 cup of water, 1/4 teaspoon salt, 2 egg whites, and 1 teaspoon of vanilla. Now what you do is you take it like a 2-quart saucepan, combine the honey, the sugar, the water, and the salt. You stir that over low heat until the sugar is dissolved. Continue cooking slowly without stirring to 265 degrees on a candy thermometer. So that's what the Christmas part of this is. You have to bring out the old candy thermometer. Meanwhile, in a large mixer bowl, you beat the egg whites at high speed until very stiff. Slowly pour on hot syrup, beating constantly at high speed until mixture loses its gloss and a small amount dropped from a spoon holds its shape. Then you add the vanilla. Drop by teaspoonfuls onto wax paper. This makes about 3.5 dozen pieces of divine divinity. Honey adds to the keeping quality of divinity. Anything that has honey in it keeps longer than the stuff that just has sugar in it. So those chocolate chip cookies are going to keep longer. Your divinity is going to keep longer. Your fudge sauce is going to keep longer. The fudge sauce you want to put in the refrigerator, but of course you never want to put anything else in the refrigerator like that that has honey in it. So, and then just for a little added bonus, you know, this does not have any honey in it, but it's David's favorite Christmas candy. One of his favorite Christmas candies. He probably actually has several of them. But I wanted to tell you what it was, and he loves the white chocolate peppermint little squarey things. I don't even know what they're called.
You got a recipe for those?
I don't have a recipe for them because it's the simplest thing in the world to do.
That's a recipe. And
all you do is you take white chocolate, and you can get the white chocolate chips, and you melt them. And you can melt them very easily in your microwave. You don't even have to get out the 2 pans of boiling water and put on the stove. Melt them in the microwave. And then do you know what you do, David?
No.
All you do is take those crushed, you take candy canes and you crush them. Yeah. So those of you who've got kids or maybe a retired husband with nothing to do, you can put those candy canes in bags and let them crush them with a little, you know, ball peen hammer or something, yeah, and make them real fine. You put those in that melted white chocolate, and then you pour it out on wax paper, You put it in the refrigerator for about 45 minutes until it gets hard. And then you just take it out of the refrigerator and you just break it off. Peppermint bark, that's what it's called.
And
you just break it off into little chunks, and that's one of David's favorite candies. Now, you can add peppermint flavoring to it if you want to. You know, just a peppermint flavoring that you get at the grocery store, and you can just add a couple, two or three drops, however many you want in it. But it's the simplest candy for Christmas.
Now, did you tell them how to make the chocolate? Do you melt the chocolate?
Yes, I told them that.
Oh, okay. I wasn't listening.
Well, see what you missed?
Yeah. So you kind of melt the chocolate down. You do a double boiler. How do you melt chocolate?
Okay, audience, what did I just say? I said the simplest way to do it.
I was working over here on this next thing.
Well, you need to listen to your own radio show. You melt it in the microwave in a bowl.
Really?
That's the easiest way to melt chocolate.
Well, does it stick to the bowl and
get
all
messy? No, no.
Yeah. Wow.
I mean, it would be if you're not, you melt it too long, but...
Well, how come you can't do beeswax that way in the microwave?
I think you can.
But it ruins your pants.
But, it would ruin anything that you have. Yeah, that's not a good idea.
I've never tried to microwave beeswax. That could be bad, couldn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
They're not melt.
Yeah, I think that would be
good. Because,
good.
Sometimes there are some plastics and things that don't burn. I'll have to do an experiment and see what pan you want me to use.
None of them.
Okay.
Well, I'm going to come back later on in the week maybe and give you a couple more Christmas recipes. I got to let my throat settle down because I've had a cold for a solid week now, and it's just getting worse. Running back and forth outside in the cold weather seems like it's getting worse. So how's that for today?
That's good, Sherry. Okay, well, Sherry, can you read one more email for us? This is an email from almost a good friend of the family. We've never met him personally, but he's bought so much stuff off of us, and he calls us and emails us, lets us know how things are going. His name is Bill Bann, and he called yesterday, and I called him back, and we had a great conversation on the phone about his bees. And so Sherry can read his email, and you'll get to know a little more about Bill Bann.
Bill writes and he says, I really enjoyed our phone conversation yesterday, David. It's amazing to discover your bees are already clustered for the winter and won't be out until March. I think that does surprise people who don't live as far north as we do. I mean, we actually live in the Midwest, but it's fairly north of people. Bill lives in Arizona. My two hives are still collecting a ton of pollen from date palm, oleander, and I think some hibiscus. Besides, I live less than a mile from the tropical gardens. I've never been there, have you?
No.
I haven't either. We probably won't see a hard freeze until mid or late January in Scottsdale. I have 2 1-quart feeders for each hive with 3-to-1 sugar water. I am refilling them every other day. Merry Christmas to you, Sherry, and your family, David. From Bill.
Yeah, he's a lot of fun, isn't he?
He is.
And I was asking him about the condition in Arizona. You know, he was saying that they really don't, they seldom get a freeze. And then, 60-degree days in the winter. So it's like, wow, that's great. I don't know much about hibiscus honey or even hibiscus. But that sounds like an interesting plant.
Those are plants that we will never see here in good old Illinois where we live.
Yeah, that's probably true.
But I bet you it tastes wonderful.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Sherry, you go in and eat some chicken noodle soup and nurse your cold away. See ya. All right, we have some more emails to I want to share with you. And let's see. We have... okay. Here's an interesting email. See which order I want to take some of these in. Oh, yeah. This is from Randy. Not sure where he lives, but he says, David, I was reading your online tutorial. Or do you say tutorial? What is it, tutorial? Or?
Tutorial.
Tutorial. And when I got to lesson 10, it sort of ended. I am really interested in doing this raising bees, but I do have one question. I live in a everyday residential neighborhood. My question is, are there any real dangers to my neighbors by trying this? We have large lots and good spacing, but I do not want to be the cause of my bees swarming someone's pet or child. Thanks, Randy. Well, Randy, that's a good question. You know, you would have to first check with your community, make sure that there aren't anything on the books to prohibit you from keeping bees. And if you are able to keep bees in your community, then I always encourage people to make sure you keep water near your hive. If you can keep a bird bath, for example, maybe 10, 15 feet away from the hive, I don't think there'll be a problem there. And especially if you make sure that your bees are very gentle. I don't know where you live, so maybe if you lived in a place where bees could become Africanized, like southern Texas, you might want to proceed with caution to make sure that you never have Africanized hives, Africanized bees. But in your case, I think you're going to be fine. I think I would go ahead and make sure that, you know, you're able to keep bees in your community and keep them watered well, and you'll be fine. And let me give you a bit of experience that I had back in the 80s, before I started keeping my own bees. I lived in a small community in central Illinois. It was just north of Springfield, a city, a little town called Williamsville. And in this little community, we lived in the church parsonage. I was a pastor. And just behind the parsonage, our yards met. The only thing that separated my neighbor from my backyard, of course, was a fence. And I had in my backyard, for my kids, I had a sandbox, a swing set, you know. And this gentleman's name was Jocko. I don't know if that was his real name, and I don't even know if he had a last name. He was old. I mean, he looked to be 100 years old, you know, and he walked old, he looked old. But he loved bees, and he had a couple of, maybe two or three hives in his backyard. And you know, these hives were only about 10 feet away from my children's sandbox and swing set. He had a long talk with me when I moved in. "David, don't worry about my bees now." I think he was from Kentucky, so I don't really know the Kentucky accent. But he said, "You know, my bees won't bother you at all. Don't worry about them. I got water out here for them." And in fact, we even had a little swimming pool, a little wading pool for our kids. Bees never bothered us. I'd sit there at the fence. I'd lean up against the fence and watch his bees in amazement. It was great. So, Randy, I wouldn't worry about it. Another time, Jocko bought a package. He must have lost one of his hives in the winter or something. He was replacing them with a package. He bought a package, you know, and installed it. And I was out in front of the parsonage that day talking with one of the elders in the church. And that package swarmed. You know how sometimes that happens? You buy a new package, 25% chance that they might leave after you install them. That's why I always suggest making sure you block off the entrance, keep them in there for at least 24 hours. But they swarmed. That was my first experience living through a swarm. We just stood out there and just got engulfed in a big tornado full of bees and didn't get stung. So I feel pretty confident that bees are safe to have if you manage them well and keep water for them in a city. All right, let's see what other kind of emails we have today. Hey, here's a cool email. Michael, he's the assistant zoological curator at the Oregon Zoo in Portland, Oregon. And he writes me because he said, "We used to use the little number dots for identifying western pond turtle hatchlings. We've been doing this for years. We're having trouble this year finding the numbered dots. Do you have a source or do you sell them? Any help is appreciated." Isn't that neat? We use the little dots for numbering our queens. Because if you just put next year it's going to be green. For 2009, if you put a green dot on your queens, you don't really know their history because you don't know one green dotted queen from another. So these little dots are little plastic cups shaped like the thorax of a queen, and they're very thin. You use a non-toxic glue, and you put the glue on the back side of this little numbered dot. It's just a little What do I call it? You know, it's just a has a curvature of the thorax of the queen, and so you just put a little glue on the back of it, and then I have a little tube and that you push it up, and her little thorax will pop up through this little netting. She doesn't hurt her, and she's being real still, held in position, and then you just glue it and put this little dot on her back. It's not that hard to do. I've got big fingers. And I've got 48-year-old eyeballs, so I don't really see up close well. But, you know, you can use the reader glasses or a little magnifying glass. It's not hard to do, to number your queens. And these little circles that you put on the queens' backs, they have numbers on them. And you can select what number you want to be. That way you can, you know, you can do a queen. You know where she came from. You think, oh, I want to watch this queen. I want to see what she does this year. I want to make sure that I keep track of her. Sometimes you might move your queens from out of one hive into another, like in our case, in our operations. But this way you can say, oh, that's number, 23. And so I answered Michael. I emailed him back, and I told him that we get ours through Better Bee. It's a bee company at betterbee.com. They sell the little numbers. And there's another company that I became aware of in England that has, I think, a little bit better quality from what I've heard, called Thorn. I think it's Thorne. They sell the little numbers too. So Michael can put those little numbers on those Western pond turtle hatchlings, and there they go. They'll feel like queens with those queen numbers on their back. Here's another email from Colette. She says, I'm interested in buying some of your packages. I need 50 or 100 packages. Can you give me a price for these? I'm also in California, so I would like to know the shipping cost. That's great. A lot of people are emailing us about our packages, and we keep saying call back January the 5th so that you can place your order. And we do have so many people. I had a gentleman yesterday that was trying to convince me to go ahead and take his order a month early. And I just said, we can't do it. We have to wait until Sherry gets everything ready. And it's quite an administrative feat to be able to keep it all straight, how many packages go where and when and everything. So Sherry doesn't want me messing with that. She's in charge of all the ordering of package fees. She's going to be at the helm of taking orders. And I assure you, it is massive. It is very involved. And we're going to leave Sherry in charge of that. She's going to take the helm January the 5th on the phone lines, taking your orders about package bees. And so those of you that are tuned in and listening, thinking about ordering bees, call back January the 5th. Here's the number, 217-427-2678. That's 217-427-2678, and you'll get a good 3-pound package with a marked Italian queen, and you'll have a great, successful bee year. All right, here's another email. You know, I was just thinking about packaged bees. I really need, maybe I'll wait for another program to talk about packaged bees, but I want to give some instructions about packaged bees. I'll hold off on that. It's still early, isn't it? It's only December. This is from Fred. He said, I just received my complete starter kit, which I ordered from your company. I'm very impressed with the quality. I have been studying all your internet lessons, and I'm excited about getting started. I am certainly sympathetic to the plight of the honeybee and intend to develop as a beekeeper, even though my friends laugh at me. Good-natured kidding. I am 58 years old and anticipating retirement, which will allow a lot of time for tending bees. My question is, when do I need to order and receive the packaged bees? I'm also anticipating ordering this second hive. And that's from Fred. Yep, Fred, same thing applies. Call us back January the 5th. Sherry will be ready to take your order at that time. All right, well, I think that's all the email we'll go through now. We have a phone call awaiting us.
Howdy, y'all. This is Robert in Irwin, Tennessee. Just not a question, but I got a comment. I'm a big vegetable gardener, and keeping bees is going to save me work next year. My garden was so productive after starting beekeeping, probably going to
Well, hello, Robert. Thanks for calling in, and I appreciate you sharing with me and our listeners about how effective honeybees are in pollinating vegetable gardens. It is tremendous. People don't believe me unless they try it like Robert has, and especially if you have any type of vegetable or fruit trees. Oh, my! Wow! Apples, you will more than double your apple production if you have adequate honeybee population. It's incredible. Hey, Robert, you know, one of the things that we did that we noticed, too, we bought our property here out in the country almost 5 years. It'd be 5 years this spring. And we have some woods that's near our house. And on the edge of these woods, there are raspberries and blackberries. And when we first moved here, you know, I noticed them, and you know, we picked them and had some, but they were marginal. And after I started keeping my bees here, oh my goodness, I could not believe the next year how huge and how prolific these raspberries and blackberries were. Larger, doubled in size, blackberries and raspberries, doubled in, you know, production. And now that we lived out here about 4 or 5 years, it's incredible. People look at these blackberries and go, wow, how do you get such huge blackberries? And I think it's through adequate pollination. Same thing with the gardens. It's just unbelievable. We need our honeybees. Have I said that yet enough? Help! Somebody start keeping bees. We need honeybees. We need to get back to the days when folks were keeping bees, because we just don't have the natural, they're called feral, F-E-R-A-L, the feral hives that are out in the woods, you know. Most of those, almost all of them got killed off in the late 80s, early 90s through the pest, the mite. And as a result, about the only bees that we have in our country anymore are bees kept by beekeepers. And we need those so bad. Oh, so badly. So please consider beekeeping, and you'll enjoy, if for no other reason, you're going to enjoy it, the benefits to your own property, your flowers, your fruit trees, your vegetable gardens. But you're going to really bless every neighbor within 3 miles of you. Those bees are going to go pollinate all the other things as well. And then you have the benefit, like Robert said, of the honey. And all that aside, it's just fascinating to keep bees. It's therapeutic. If your doctor has told you you need to relax, you're stressed out, maybe you ought to think about beekeeping. I have many beekeepers that tell me they just pull up a lawn chair in front of you'd never want to get in front of a hive because you block the entrance. And not that they'll get mad at you, but they just can't land and take off. But if you put your lawn chair in the summer off to the side of your hive and just sit there with a glass of sweet tea and a lemon in it, stretch your legs out in front of you and watch these bees go in and out. Oh, you're going to have such a good time. Hey, thanks for calling in, Robert. And I think you said you were in Irwin, Tennessee. I'm not familiar with where Irwin is in Tennessee. I lived in Memphis, and so you can let me know if you're anywhere close to Memphis. I actually lived in Memphis and went to East High School. It went from kindergarten all the way up to high school. And I went to school there the same time that the famous movie actress Sybil Shepherd went there. And she was in my sister's yearbook. My sister was older than I was. I think I was in fourth grade when Sybil was there. So good to hear from another Tennessean. And that's the old volunteer state for sure. Hey, I'm going to go out and check on my son, Seth. I'll take you with me. Seth, I'm trying to get Seth to be on the radio or the broadcast with us. But he's 15, you know, and you know how 15-year-olds are. They're kind of bashful. We'll see if we can get a word out. He's out here building stuff out in our production facility here. He's just getting started. Let me see. Just hang with me here a second. A few doors to walk through. Hey, Seth, how you doing? What you gonna do today? Huh? It's my radio. This is Studio B Live, and this is Seth. Seth, Say hello to everyone.
Hi.
All right, let me turn the radio down. We keep the radio out here in the shop pretty loud. All right. So you're going to get, you're kind of getting things warmed up out here?
Yeah, I am.
You run out of kerosene?
I don't know. Have I?
Let me look. Yeah, I'd say you're out. I got the other heater going on over there, the propane heater.
Okay.
So what are you going to build today?
Bottom bores and top covers. I guess whatever you want me to.
Yeah, we need some inner covers, too.
Oh, okay. So I can do that.
Yeah, you know, we had problems with some of the frame pieces yesterday. So if you find any more of those little side bars that have that same problem, set them aside, and I'll take care of that, okay?
Okay.
Anything else you want to say to our folks that are listening?
I don't know. Not really.
Okay. We'll let you get back to work, and so do a good work today. See you later, Seth.
Bye.
All right. Well, we got a few words out of Seth there. Let's see how you do pouring that in there. Be careful. Don't spill. You know what I do, Seth? I put my thumb over the end of that. No, the other end. Yeah, put your thumb, and then you can get it real close to the spigot and move your thumb out of the way. There you go. Dad's always giving instructions, you know. Hey, this is what it's like to be a part of Studio B Live. Live meaning you just walk around with me in my honey operation all day. This is this room here, you can't see it, but this is the room that we actually extract all of our honey in. And I've got a Cowan automatic uncapper, motor driven, and it's got hot blades on it. They go back and forth. I'll turn it on. You can hear it. I think they're a little frozen up because let me see if I can give them a little push. I think they kind of got a little sticky from some honey on them last time. Let's see. There we go. Now it's working. And it just cuts the cappings right off. They fall into a basket. It's all conveyor belt driven. The frames go on down a belt where another person standing over there can pick them up and put them into our extractor where the honey is extracted. It's spun. It's a 33 frame extractor. And in here, I've still got a lot of honey in here that I didn't extract. I probably have four or five frames of supers, maybe 30, 60 supers in here. And I can extract it if I want to, but I'm saving it in case I see that I need to give my bees some more food during the winter. I'll go into my hives on a pretty decent day if it gets, you know, 35, 45 degrees in January or February, and I can take these frames of honey, scratch them open, and plop them in the hive. So just in case we have a bad winter and they eat all of their food source, I've got some in there that I can give them. So let me run back to the studio. Now that you've met my son, Seth, we'll get back in here. Pardon the wind just a moment. And I'll get warm, and it's kind of cold here today. All right. Now it's time for the equipment section of our broadcast. This is the equipment section of our broadcast today. Yesterday we talked about the frames. We've been working our way down through the beehive, the woodenware, starting at the top and working our way down. And one of the last components to talk about in our look into the beehive is the bottom board. The bottom board. If you're an old-time beekeeper, a long-time beekeeper, then you know that the bottom board usually requires the most attention. Years ago, I have in front of me, years ago we used to use this solid bottom board. I have one particular customer that loves the solid bottom board as compared to this green bottom board. But this bottom board, the solid bottom board, is nothing more than, you know, a base that the hive boxes sit on, and it has a 3/4 inch lip that's above the floor of this board, so that when you set your box on it, you have a 3/4 inch opening because one end is open to this bottom. And that's what the bees use to go in and out. It's called a bottom board. We have found over the years recently that the solid bottom board does have some challenges, and we have always known this. We've just dealt with it. The biggest challenge on the solid bottom board is the number of dead bees that accumulate there during the winter, and the way that mites can fall to the bottom of the bottom board and wait for a bee to walk on it, and then they jump on the bee and go back up. And there's other debris that gets on it as well. So now we've changed the design. I don't know how long ago. It's been a good number of years. And now we make what is called the screened bottom board. And this bottom board is nothing more than the same solid bottom board, but it has a screen in place of the bottom instead of wood. And what happens is all the debris, little chunks of wax and mites, falls through the screen and out of the hive. It makes a much more clean hive. And bees are very hygienic. And so they like to drop all the stuff that needs to go out of the hive, or they like to carry it out. And so particularly with mites, I've noticed on videos, when the bees begin to scratch or scrape at the mites and get them off their backs, they will grab them and throw them. And when they fall through the screen, the mites are more of a parasite. They travel on the bees. They're not good climbers. They don't climb back in the hive very easily once they're through the screen. So this is a part of what we call IPM. Get familiar with that term, another abbreviation? We should have a whole segment on beekeeping abbreviations, like do you know what AFB is? AFB, American Foul Brood. How about DCA? DCA, it's Drone Congregational Area. Well, this is another abbreviation that we use. It's called IPM. It stands for Integrated Pest Management. And what it means, it's been around in agricultural for years, you know, but beekeeping has adopted it too. It means that we use some integrated methods, various methods to get rid of the mites. And screen bottom board is one of those methods of helping the mites to fall through. This screen bottom board, by the way, we make it still the same way that you make a typical solid bottom board. What's interesting is, in the old days, you could reverse these. They're called reversible bottom boards. So if you take it and flip it over, it's smaller on this side. It's only 3/8 of a gap. Where your bees are, when you put your box on it, you're going to have a 3/8 inch opening for the bees to come and go. And this is what people did in days gone by. If they wanted to restrict the opening, say for winter, they would flip it over and use a 3/8 gap instead of the 3/4 of an inch gap on the other side, and they flip it back. But, you know, I really don't find anyone. In fact, challenge me, call me, and let me know if you're flipping your bottom boards. They're called reversible bottom boards. We still make them reversible. Everybody does. But I don't think anybody reverses them. So I don't know why we make them reversible. But call me and let me know if you think that there's a benefit to reversing your bottom board. I kind of don't think so. And let's see. I think I'll save the cleat for tomorrow, the entrance cleat. And we'll do that. We'll look at the entrance cleat and how to effectively use the entrance cleat tomorrow on our equipment section. And now it's time for Back in History. And now it's time for a look back in history. Well, today I want to take you back in time to late 1800s to early 1900s. This is when we see a lot of people really making their mark on beekeeping. And one of those individuals was Jay Smith. And I've enjoyed his book so much. He's written a couple of books, but this one kind of summarizes, I believe, his previous book. This book is entitled Better Queens. Better Queens. And it's a neat little book. He's got a picture of his wife in the front. I believe it was, this book may have been published around, it says 19, it says copyright 1949. And I don't know if it was actually copyrighted or updated at that time. But it's a neat book with a lot of good information about raising queens. But he writes it in such a style that it's a lot of fun to read and to listen to. He shares a lot of his personal experiences, his personal life. And I actually downloaded this book. And because it's so old, it's just not available in print anymore. And if any of you find one or have this book that's bound, Better Queens by Jay Smith, I want a copy. I'll buy it. I mean, you know, I keep watching eBay thinking that someone's going to put one on there. But I haven't seen it yet. But it's good. It's a fun book to read, and you can download it online. In fact, let me give you the URL that you can go online and download this book. A gentleman that you probably have heard of, if you're a beekeeper for a while, is Michael Bush, and he has a website at Bush Farms. That's B-U-S-H, bushfarms.com. And I believe if you just go to bushfarms.com and type in bees, better queens. Well, just go to bushfarms.com and look around. You'll see perhaps where Michael has either photocopied. I think it's like he's photocopied or like a, I don't know how he did it, but he has this book available for download, and then you can just print it off on your computer. And this was a very interesting individual, Jay Smith. He is well known for inventing or discovering, I guess is the right word to use, discovering how to make starter hives that when you actually take your grafts from your hives that you want to make queens from, you graft the eggs out and you put them in queen cups in a starter hive. And so he is the one who kind of nailed down that process. And I was going to read you just a section of this book. Thought maybe you'd have a lot of fun with this. This is, again, Jay Smith from his book, Better Queens, published in 1949. And this is a section that says, Beginning Commercial Queen Rearing. Listen to this. One day in 1912, State Bee Inspector Dan Urbaugh came to inspect my bees. I remember he stood for some time in silence watching the flight of the bees. And then he turned to me and said, Why don't you sell some queens? And then he said, Those are the finest bees I ever saw. I asked him how he could judge bees by merely looking at them. He replied, I can tell by the looks of them and by the way they act. Here I am right among them and none offers to sting. Having had little experience with bees except my own, I took it for granted all bees were like that. I told Dan that I would greatly enjoy rearing queens if I could sell them. I shall never forget how he looked at me and replied, Sell them? Why, of course you can sell queens like these, and you will not have to do much advertising either. I rather had my doubts, but thought I would try it. I made some mating hives of various models, and when I had a dozen queens on hand, I wrote Mr. Urbaugh I had some queens ready. I made the remark to my wife that maybe Mr. Urbaugh was just talking to please me and really did not mean what he said. In a few days, I received a check from him for 6 queens. I said to my wife, I thought he was just kidding, but that check doesn't lie. Thus, at Mr. Urbaugh's request, I became a full-fledged commercial queen breeder. I could have gone into some other business and no doubt made more money, but doubt if I would have gotten so much out of life. I've given all there is in me to the thought of better bees and especially better methods of producing them. During the years that have passed since 1900, I have spent many thousands of dollars in experimenting. When I found a new mating hive that suited me better than the old ones I was using, I would burn the old ones in the furnace. As Josh Billings put it, experience is a crude teacher, but the tuition comes pretty high. That's a look back in history at J. Smith and his book, Better Queens. And that's all the time we have tonight. You've been listening to Studio B Live on a very cold, wintry night here in Central Illinois from Long Lane Honeybee Farms. And it is always a good time to be with you each time you tune in. We appreciate you listening so much today and look forward to being with you next time. And we want to give you our contact information because we are desperately seeking more beekeepers who will call in and ask a whopper of a question. Nobody has stumped me yet. And we want you to call in, ask a beekeeping question, and I'll answer your questions. All you have to do is call our question and answer line, wait for the tone, and leave your name and your question, and we'll play it on our upcoming broadcast. Here's our telephone number to ask your question on, 217-427-2430. You can call in like Fred did today, and you can have a good time just sharing with us your experience about beekeeping, even if you don't have a question. We'd love to hear from you, and it would be your chance to have your moment in fame. Okay, so that number again is 217-427-2430 is our question and answer line. Hey, if you'd like to place an order for your woodenware, hive materials such as supers, bottom boards, or complete hives, getting ready for spring is something you want to do right now. All right, use these winter months, these cold months, to get ready for spring. Don't wait until spring to kind of throw your beekeeping operation all together at once. Call our order line today and order your hives. We sell complete hives for $159. And we would love to have your business. Our telephone number is 217-427-2678 to place orders. And if we're not near the phone, just leave your name and number on our answering machine, and we'll call you back as soon as we can. We always enjoy talking to our customers and helping you enjoy beekeeping. We personally take an interest in you when you call, and we want to help you. We'll do all we can to assist you. Many people send us digital pictures of what's going on in their hive, asking us questions, asking us to diagnose various issues they may be having. We love that. We don't mind a bit giving you our advice from our years of experience in beekeeping. So when you order from us, you not only just get a high-quality piece of equipment, but you also get a high-quality friend. How's that? David and Sherry will be your friend, all right? There you go. If you want to stop by our website, we'd love for you to take a look. It's honeybeesonline.com. Honeybeesonline.com. And you can check us out on eBay. You will often see most of our equipment listed on eBay as well. You just go to an eBay site and then type in beekeeping on your search tab, and you'll probably wind up looking at some of our sites. They will say Long Lane Honeybee Farms, and you can certainly order that way, or you can order through honeybeesonline.com. Until tomorrow, remember to behave yourself.